Constant Wonder Kids is a Constant Wonder podcast.
Hi, Wonder Kids. It's Paige. Here on Constant Wonder Kids, we talk a lot about how the natural world is connected. The idea that plants, animals, and environments help and support one another, and that when something is wrong in one part of an ecosystem, it begins to impact the whole ecosystem. But does that ever make you wonder about how plants and animals know so much about one another? Today's guest teaches us that there are lots of ways that plants and animals make plans to help and thwart one another, all depending on what's going on in their environment.
I've been a naturalist since I was 19. I actually started plants first when I was 16, just picking up some local field guides and going hiking. And so I've always kind of looked at things from the perspective of habitat. Everything is really site-specific. And habitat is the key, and the basis of that habitat are the plants. Understanding those interconnected relationships between plants and animals and ecosystems is key.
This is Bryant Olson. He's a conservation ecologist at Tracy's Aviary in Salt Lake City, Utah. He's primarily a bird expert, but his interest in birds has also led him to study the plants, animals, and environmental factors that affect the birds in his area. Because trees are a source of food and shelter for birds, Bryant has spent time learning how trees communicate with one another.
There's actually a couple different potentials or possibilities for ways that plants could communicate. One of the topics that's been discussed recently is actually involves fungi.
What do you know about fungi? Fungi are living things that are a little bit like plants, but also a little bit like animals. They don't make their own food from sunlight like plants do. Instead, they grow on things like soil, wood, or fallen leaves and break them down to get nutrients.
So there's underneath the forest floor, so there's all these roots of all these trees, but then there's also these webs of what's called mycorrhizal fungi. We've known for a long time that these fungi are very specific, so certain species of fungi are very specific to certain trees. And we've also known that the fungi play a role in acquiring and breaking down decaying matter and therefore making those nutrients available to the trees.
So fungi provide important food and nutrients to trees. But interestingly enough, they also allow for trees to transfer nutrients to one another.
What they began to understand is that these fungi connections go between different individual trees, and it kind of creates a whole network. And apparently, trees can transfer nutrients to other trees through these fungi networks. And so there's what they call grandmother trees or hub trees. I've heard them called both, which tend to be the largest, biggest, oldest trees in the forest. They therefore have the biggest canopies, getting the most light, and they're photosynthesizing and creating, you know, carbohydrates and nutrients from photosynthesis. And they're actually giving those excess nutrients to their offspring trees that are younger and don't get as much light.
So these great big grandma trees who get plenty of light and nutrients are able to transfer their nutrients to the smaller offspring trees through the fungi. That's kind of like a human grandma making dinner for all of her grandkids. But trees don't just provide food and nutrients for one another. Creatures like squirrels, birds, chipmunks, deer, and even bear eat seeds from trees for added nutrition. And while these animals can also sometimes spread seeds around while eating fruit from trees, there are times when trees don't want the predators to eat their seeds. That's when trees start changing how they produce seeds from year to year.
So every year, a tree produces seeds, and those seeds could potentially become a new tree, and that's how they keep their genes going through time and keep the forest alive. But then there's all these seed predators, so squirrels, various birds, that deliberately seek out and eat those seeds. Now, if you're a tree, if you make the same amount of seeds every year, then your seed predators, or basically their populations, are going to build until they basically wipe out all your seeds every year. And so what we found, and we actually found this directly in the research that we're doing at Altascaria, is that trees kind of stagger their seed production. So some years they have a really big crop, which is more than their seed predators can handle. Those are called bumper crop years. And so they basically are overwhelming their seed predators. And then in the next few years, they produce almost no seeds. And so those seed predators, their populations will diminish, you know, because if they just made a bumper crop every year or every other year, their predator population would just stay high. But if they kind of lean them out for a few years, then their populations drop, and then they can overwhelm them again.
That's remarkable. I know that we're in the habit of believing that trees don't think, but that's a pretty smart plan. Making too many seeds one year and not enough for the next couple of years keeps the predator populations guessing and moving on to different areas, rather than preying on the same trees over and over again.
So it seems to be a strategy of manipulating their seed predators, because another thing that many seed predators do is they cache seeds for later. And so squirrels and also some birds like Clark's nutcrackers, they'll harvest in the fall, they'll just harvest as many seeds as they can, way more than they can eat. You know, there was a Clark's nutcracker in, I believe, Colorado that was systematically watched and counted, and it cached over 90,000 seeds in one fall.
90,000 seeds? That's way more than one bird could eat.
They don't know when there's going to be another big crop again, and so when they see a big crop, they just cache as many as they can, because the next year might be no crop.
So even if the trees try to trick the birds, then the birds just store more food the next time there's a big crop year. Nature finds a way of balancing things out. Now, remember how Bryant is a birder? He keeps track of the different birds that travel through his area over the years. Recently, he's been paying attention to a species of bird called the red crossbill.
There's a specific bird called the red crossbill, and they're found all across the entire northern hemisphere, from Mexico all the way to treeline in Alaska, and then they're found all across Siberia and Scandinavia. Wherever there's forests in the northern hemisphere, there's red crossbills. These birds are almost the exclusive food they can eat is conifer seeds.
Conifer seeds come from conifer trees, like spruce, pine, and fir trees. Conifer seeds are a bit different than the seeds you see in an apple or something like that, because they come in cone shape. Red crossbills have special mouths that allow them to eat the seeds inside spruce, fir, and pine cones.
They're so adapted for eating that food that it's pretty much their only food. So their bill is designed to open those cones, and they stick their little tongue in there and pull out the seed. And so we can actually see, by the presence or absence and the number of crossbills, what the cone crop of the spruce is doing. And some years when there's basically no food, there's no crossbills at all. And then some years when there's a really good crop, there's a lot of crossbills. And then in some years when there's just a few cones, there's just a few kind of sporadic crossbills.
So as a birder, Bryant is extra interested in knowing what these tree cones' production is like, so that he can increase his chances of seeing red crossbills. It's amazing because it's not just one tree that changes how many cones it produces. It's all the trees working together to change the cone production.
If each individual tree just kind of did its own thing based on its available nutrients, then the crossbills would just go to the tree up the slope, you know. But the trees seem to synchronize their cone crops. So it's not just the cone crops at Alta, but we also do study work in City Creek Canyon, which is about 20 miles to the north of Alta. And what we see directly is whatever's happening at Alta is also happening at City Creek Canyon. So that's 20 miles away. They're different elevations, so it's different species of trees. So in City Creek, it's mostly Douglas fir. But somehow these two distant areas are doing the exact same thing. So when there's a big crop of spruce at Alta, there's a big crop of Douglas fir at City Creek. When there's a poor crop of spruce at Alta, there's a poor crop of Douglas fir at City Creek. I do think that there is a larger scale to that synchronicity.
I think it's incredible that trees are able to communicate with one another so far and wide. It's important to understand how trees and forests work together, because just like the red crossbill population is affected by what's going on with the trees, human populations are affected by the conditions of their forests as well.
There's a lot of ways that we are dependent upon these forests. Humans are not separate from nature. We are bound by the laws of nature, whether we like to acknowledge that or not. Every breath you take, that oxygen that you're getting in your lungs is coming from plants, and particularly from forests. Forests are the lungs of the earth. And the northern forest, they actually can look at the CO2 levels in the atmosphere, and every summer, those great northern forests that we've been talking about basically take a deep breath and turn millions of tons of carbon dioxide into oxygen.
Trees help us breathe, but they also help us manage water and provide lumber for building, too.
Without trees, a lot of our water just kind of falls on the rocks and just runs off down the rivers and out to the ocean. But with trees and vegetation, they kind of soak up that water and kind of hold it, and they release the water during photosynthesis. They also shade the ground, and that lowers temperatures and raises humidity rates. And then there's, you know, lumber. We need lumber for construction. We need lumber for all sorts of things. We need trees. We need healthy, vibrant, living ecosystems, not only for our health and well-being, both mentally and physically, but also for our economies.
Wow, that's amazing. Trees really are so important for our world, and that's why Bryant likes to keep an eye on bird populations. Not only are they fun to look at, but the birds reveal important information about how the forests are doing.
We use birds as indicators of forest health, of ecosystem health. So we can look at bird populations. We can see their trends over time, their short-term trends, long-term trends, and we can assess the biological productivity of these ecosystems and see if they're healthy or if they're not healthy, if they're declining.
Understanding our ecosystem's health becomes easier and easier once we realize how connected they are. Bryant and other ecologists can teach us the importance of respecting and maintaining our forests. So the next time you're outside, look around and try to notice what different plants and animals you see. And remember, you're an important part of your ecosystem, too.
Forests communicate more than you know. Trees tell each other how much food to grow. Our plants and animals are so connected. In nature's giant web, we are all protected.
A quick word here for you parents. I'm Marcus Smith, host of Constant Wonder, which is the source of material for Constant Wonder Kids. We made this episode because Constant Wonder contains a lot of great stuff that kids will love too, but you may be wanting more. We've got a whole episode for you devoted to the way the natural world communicates. If you want to hear the full presentation, go find Constant Wonder wherever you get your podcasts. The episode is called Nature Conspiracies. Constant Wonder is on an ongoing quest to find awe and wonder in all nature, human or wild, vast or small. The kinds of encounters that move us beyond words. Remember when you had time for wonder? Well, we think you still do. Subscribe to Constant Wonder on your favorite platform. Constant Wonder Kids was produced by Paige Crumperman Darrington with sound design by Mitchell Towsley. Tenery Taylor is the executive producer. Constant Wonder Kids is a production of BYU Radio.